Hello and welcome to the Sydney Institute podcast. The Institute is Australia's premier current affairs forum. Every week, contemporary political, social, cultural, and economic issues are explored at the Institute through dialogue and discussion. This podcast was recorded recently at a members' forum in the city of Sydney. Thanks for listening, and for more information about the Sydney Institute, please visit www.thesydneyinstitute.com.au. We hope you enjoy this event.
I've been along tonight to hear the Honourable Michael McCormick, who makes his first appearance at the Sydney Institute, and he's very welcome. As you know, he's the Minister for Small Business, but I'll introduce him briefly. He was elected to the seat of Riverina in 2010. He became Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister for Finance, and now, of course, he's the Minister for Small Business. His background is in journalism and as a reporter. He's also written some booklets and pamphlets on matters from bush rangers in his area to sporting figures in his area. The Minister was saying briefly that he's only the second federal minister from the Riverina. So it's great to have Michael McCormick here tonight, and the topic is Australia, a small business success. Minister, thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Gerard, and acknowledge my state parliamentary colleague, Jenny Atchison, and all of you for coming out this evening. Very much appreciate a big audience, and I know it'll be an enthusiastic audience later when we do a bit of Q&A. I look forward to that. Look, every single morning, almost one in two Australians goes to work in a small business. Every morning, the wages of 5.6 million of us are paid, and our communities are served by 3.2 million small businesses. So every time Australia's economic indicators show more people in work, as they've done today, more growth in our economy, or even more choice on our supermarket shelves, the sector doing the heavy lifting is always, always the same. Small business. Australia is a story of small business success. So tonight I'm going to share with you that story of hard work and determination. The story of new ideas, new ventures. The story of economic success. Tonight I will share with you the story of small business and why the Liberals, Nationals in government, federal government, see small business as sacrosanct. I'm sure they do the same in New South Wales too. And why it's our values which always have your back. For the government, it starts with injecting confidence. For a business to pursue a new idea, to hire another Australian or give someone else a go, takes a fair degree of courage. It's the belief that the service you offer will be something that consumers want. The belief that the person you hire will help your business grow and that your work can fund the wage of that person. The belief that the economy is in need of more people like you pursuing their idea. So as a government, it's our role to respect that. Our role is to respect you. It's our role to applaud those Australians for whom the challenge of starting a new small business is equally entwined with the excitement of opportunity. And there's a lot of excitement in starting a new small business. It's our job, federal government's job, to make that job easier, to make your job easier. When we can do that successfully, small business people can create jobs. Wages can grow in the economy. So too, a modernising workplace and marketplace can keep small business front and centre. But the challenge of this change and adaptation is vast. So small business needs people who share its passion, who understands its struggles, and who want to champion its success. And in the Liberals and the Nationals government in Canberra, it's the best friend small business has ever had. The Liberal and Nationals in government have made small business the front of its policy agenda since coming into government in 2013. We started from a low base, a clean slate if you will, after the chaotic years of Rudd, Gillard, Rudd. We hit the ground running. We introduced the $20,000 instant asset write-off. We reduced red tape by $5.8 billion a year. We implemented unfair contract legislation. We continue to engage small business in procurement jobs and pay them on time, and that's important. We signed free trade agreements with China, with South Korea and Japan. We established the Australian Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman. We changed the definition of what is a small business from $2 million to $10 million turnover for companies, or $2 million to $5 million for unincorporated businesses. We legislated small business taxes to fall to 25% over the decade for companies and a 15% reduction for unincorporated businesses. We've worked tirelessly with the Senate crossbench to achieve these reforms, regardless of relentless Labor obstruction. I'm genuinely energised by what this government has been able to achieve for small business and by small business people themselves. Upon being appointed the Minister for Small Business, I committed to visit as many small businesses as I could. I have visited every state, and indeed I did that in the first 3 months of the job, and now in a little over a year, I've visited more than 60 towns in electorates which are National, Liberal, Labor, Greens and Independent, to understand in explicit detail the conditions of the sector, to hear feedback. That's one of the most important jobs, if not the most important job of any politician, to hear feedback. More importantly then, to act on that feedback. I know the best ideas don't come from the bureaucracy. They don't even indeed come from politicians. They come from people at the coalface. They come from the people who have a stake in the sector, the people who have risked it all to follow their dream. Small businesses succeed by providing their goods and services in a manner which is more valuable than their competitors. They need to be proactive, agile and courageous, nimble, Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull would call it, and they need a government they can trust to back them to achieve their potential. Similarly, government, through policy, needs to create the certainty and the business conditions in Australia which are modern, dynamic, non-intrusive and supportive of the small business, demonstrating we are on their side, spurring them on to achieve their full potential. Tonight I want to convey to you my forward policy agenda for small business. Payment times is an issue that is raised time and again right across this nation. Over the past 6 months, analysis by Xero shows 65% of small business and medium enterprises have had invoices overdue by more than 30 days. 65%. And unsurprisingly, small and medium enterprises which experience late payments are three times more likely to go out of business than those which receive payment within 30 days. I'm reaching the final stages of preparing a response to the Australian Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman's Payments Times Inquiry. And I can promise you I'm not going to stand by while big business dictate unrealistic payment terms and times to small business on a take-it-or-leave-it basis. To me, this constitutes a breach of our unfair contract legislation, and I'm eager for the opportunity to throw the resources available to me to prove this in court. The federal government is already a model small business player and is a payer and is... We're a player too, we do a lot of procurement. And it's attempting to influence big business into doing just the same. Project bank accounts mirrored payment terms on government jobs and extending swift payment expectations to government agencies are very high on my agenda. I commend the Business Council of Australia for implementing its voluntary payment code, which sets the expectation of big business payment to small businesses within 30 days. That's good. It's a good start. However, don't for a second think I've discounted or ruled out legislating payment terms. Legislating payment terms. If behaviour does not change and the scant regard for small businesses isn't alleviated, all options will be on the table. But the voluntary code is a good start and I'll be monitoring it very closely. There are opportunities for small business today that shrink the world. We live in a global village, but it's ever shrinking. Small business have access to technology and distribution networks and markets never before experienced, never before imagined. We don't just surf online, we live online. It's my ambition that small business have access to the knowledge for them to be competitive overseas. It's my ambition that small business have access to the equipment for them to be competitive internationally. I will work closely with my Treasury colleagues as they finalise the inquiry into the black economy to see if there are opportunities to synchronise the crackdown on the black economy and transitioning small businesses of all shapes and sizes to embrace technology. Technology also has the potential to significantly shorten payment times and terms, in addition to the payment times inquiry I mentioned just a few moments ago. My party, the Nationals are passionate about decentralisation. That's why the team, well led by Deputy Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce and Minister for Regional Development Senator Fiona Nash, are asking ministers to report on agencies within government which could work well outside of Canberra. That's why the team is working to bring jobs to places such as Wagga Wagga, my hometown, through the Rural Industries Research and Development Corporation and the Australian Pesticides and Veterinary Medicines Authority to Armidale, along with a number of others. Our Nationals team want to build on the legacy which moved the Australian Taxation Office to Albury, a little more than an hour's drive from my hometown, and that was in May 1976. Now, I'm just not long off the phone from the Albury Mayor, Kevin Mack, who tells me that in May 1976, on the corner of Olive and Swift Streets, the ATO opened its office, a manager and eight staff. And now what is it today? 1,200 staff. 1,200 staff. And I hear your gasps. And Kevin Mack, as the Mayor of Albury, is pretty proud of that. He should be. It's boost to the local economy and the public service continues to this day. But there is a misconception the Nationals are solely about moving public servants to the regions. And Kevin wanted me to point out that we ought to move some of the corporations out too and provide incentives for them to do so. And we're doing just that. We're considering just that. Decentralisation is much bigger than this. Much, much bigger. Moving government agencies out of the big capital cities to regional centres is just the pebble in the pool. The thing which starts the ripple from one little change expanding and growing. In my own region, corporate decentralisation from Mars at Albury Wodonga has brought hundreds of jobs, just like the ATO, thousands of people and much in investment. The company has continued to grow and we have grown with it. In Wagga Wagga, our three defence bases, including the home of the soldier at Kapooka and RAF base Wagga, has supported local families, local contractors and local futures for decades. This is a model from which Australia can build. Every new job in the country is a start for an Australian family. It's a new beginning for one of our communities and a new adventure for the Australian economy. And it's what our modern trading partners do too. Connectivity and synergy are not just buzzwords. It's not just part of a corporate prospectus on Pitt Street. It's the basis of the movement which is building our country and building resilience along with it. And there's no better example of resilience than in small business. And there's no better example of resilience than in regional Australia, let me tell you. I'm looking forward tonight to catching up with Craig Shapiro a little later tonight after this event. Craig is a financial services expert, a big end of town boy, and I don't think he'd mind me calling him that. He's one of the growing number of city investors looking to regional Australia as a viable, profitable exercise, and I heartily commend him for it. He is the CEO and the co-founder of the iconic of the Blue River Group. Well, it will be an iconic company. They've actually just last year purchased what is an iconic company, and that is the Wagga Wagga Dairy Company, Riverina Fresh. 94 years strong. 94 years old, 94 years strong. What Blue River Group has done is transformed that iconic company, automating it, looking for new markets, and investing, perhaps even more importantly, in new products, particularly in the yoghurt range. I quite enjoy those, whilst keeping the same number of employees. So they've kept the jobs, they're expanding the company. His is a fantastic corporate decentralisation story, and we want to hear and see more of that. Now, sit in the pub on a Friday night in a town such as Grongrong. Yes, such a town exists. In the Riverina region, you'll get some frank advice as the local MP, and I'm sure you get some free and frank advice. I'm sure you do, just like I do. And you'll meet the people who own that pub, Tad and Kay Obadinsky. They're good people. They've run the pub for a long while, and they've poured their heart and soul into making something that they can sell eventually, and they can happily retire. You might hear about Tad's VFL career. He was a full forward with South Melbourne in the 70s. It's now called the Sydney Swans in Sydney. Now, he played two games, no goals. He describes himself as the worst full forward in VFL history. He's a bit self-deprecating, my mate Tad, but a VFL career at the highest level nonetheless. It's two more games than most of us will ever play. In fact, my football career was two games with Ungerry alongside Chris Danaher. I played two games, two kicks, one mark, one handball, two broken ribs, but that's another story. Now, if you're in the Royal Hotel at Grongrong, you might hear how the season's going, whether grain prices are good and what Kay has on for tea. Bangers and mash, that's my favourite, for the truckies who traverse the nation taking product from farm gate to dinner plate. But you'll also hear about jobs. local jobs, Australians' jobs, jobs in Wagga Wagga and surrounds, jobs worth travelling for, and jobs someone's done many, many miles away. You'll hear that more often than not. It's small business which provides those jobs. Jobs are the mainstay of small business in Australia. We all know that. It's something broader than a philosophical argument. It's more than an economic model. It's respecting that small businesses are the real drivers of jobs growth in Australia. Every single Australian, no matter their age, their postcode, their income, wants to see more Australians in work. A job is more than a number on a spreadsheet. It's more than an indicator to the market, and it's more than a figure for the future. A job is food on the table. It's bills paid on time. It's the dignity and respect that someone has the faith in you to deliver what that organisation needs, wants and expects. And for more Australians than not, that very dignity and respect is spurned, is inspired by small business, inspired by small business. So this leads me into what I'm doing to help as part of the Nationals in government to help small business create more jobs and to have a go. It's easy in politics these days to get caught up in an echo chamber. I say this as a journalist with 21 years experience. The scale, the pace and intensity of rolling media cycles, of social media, of immediately ruling something in or ruling something out, and you know, you've done it, we've all done it, we've all been questioned, we've all been, you know, put on the spot, and that's fine. It's shifting the focus away from, some way from Tad and Kay and the fact that they're having a go in small business in a small country town. It's shifting those people we listen to away from those who've done it before to those who have a character limit. So for me, and life isn't in 140 characters, neither is small business. And so for me, the most important thing I value today, as I have every day I've been in Parliament, is to listen, to hear feedback. I caught some nationwide attention when I went to the Royal Hotel at Grong Grong a few years ago. I'd called into the Royal for tea, Kay's famous bangers and mash, and a great local OJ, as I often do. That's orange juice at the pub, yes. It was Australia Day. Prince Philip had just got a knighthood. And rather than the matter at hand, I really thought the focus was shifting away from the people we needed to listen to. And so I said so to the national media. I didn't get into politics to play games, to background, to see promotion as a prize only unto itself and not to work hard. I got into politics because I wanted to champion my community, its causes, its ideas, its people. It's people. It's people. That was me as the editor of the Wagga Daily Advertiser from the age of 27. That was me as the small business owner whose publishing business helped a Wagga Wagga printing firm with which we did business move to a new building, buy a new four-coloured press and put more people on, just to keep up with our work. That was for me for decades, and it's still me today. Because more important than your character count online is how you count your character in politics. I want you to know that. More importantly, it's who you fight for, because the people and the issues you fight for in Parliament speak volumes about your values. If you turn your back on the industry which put food on your family's table for 8 years, my own days in small business, then you're in Parliament for the wrong reason. Equally, if you don't use your opportunities to make it easier for those who follow, then you're also in Parliament for the wrong reason. I'm in Parliament for a very simple reason. The people I meet each and every day. Our regional people. Our farmers. Our people in small business. Our people who are doing it tough. Our resilient people. They are the people of my community. I'm proud of them, and I want them to know that I'm doing the very best for them. But more than that, as the Small Business Minister, it's all people in small business who I now champion. And certainly in the Federal Parliament, I do everything I can to make sure their voices are heard. They're the ones who've given me the privilege to stand in the Parliament as a local member, as a minister, and be their voice. And they are the people to whom I'll always be responsible and for whom I'll always fight. This is not some practiced political line. It's something I've thought about for a long time, starting when I was a journalist and then editor of my hometown's newspaper for over 21 years. There is something different being a community advocate in the community, in the country. Because our towns are smaller, more people know who you are. You can't even go to the supermarket on a Sunday morning and sneak in and just buy milk and bread. You get tackled by somebody who wants a pothole fixed, somebody who wants their voice listened to. You work with the people in a number of settings. It might be at the newspaper, the canteen, at the footy club, as the volunteer coach of the local cricket side or the local school PNF. And when you're a community leader, to them, you're always accountable. So this is something I think about each and every day, each and every night as a parliamentarian. Mine is not an electorate that votes for a brand nor is swayed by what one big party says about the other in the city. Ours are campaigns by locals, for locals, about locals, by locals. So there are times when the challenge of being a parliamentarian is broader than just the party line. That's why I probably spoke up about Prince Philip. And for me, this was so in my first term. My Riverina electorate then encompassed the large Murrumbidgee irrigation area. No doubt you've heard of it. Mm-hmm. If you haven't heard of it, you've no doubt eaten their food. And what the many communities, the sole being of which is centred on water in the MIA. And the Parliament had to consider the Murray-Darling Basin Plan. This was a plan which caused angst in my communities, whether you're a farmer or whether you weren't. Water is that region's lifeblood, and city-centric politicking sought to see these proud communities become a shadow of their former selves. So this at a time where we were tested, our community was at its best. We stood up, we defended our region, and we told the story of the region, of our production, of our people, and more importantly, of our potential. The original guide to the draft of the plan would have been a death knell for many of the small businesses in those river communities. Its social and economic impact would have been vast, and the challenges which faced that community under the proposed water cuts would have been immense. So when the bill eventually came before the Parliament, I knew I had to be their champion, their voice. Being my community's champion meant crossing the floor against my own colleagues and moving a motion which would have disallowed the Murray-Darling Basin Plan. Believe me, there were people in Parliament who warned me not to do that. There were those seeking to move the motion before me from seats thousands of kilometres away and playing politics with my people. But for me, my job was clear. No matter the politics, it would be me, and only me, who would walk down Banner Avenue in Griffith that next week and have to look my constituents in the eye. So I moved the motion of disallowance, and as a result, the Liberals and Nationals committed to cap water buyback at 1,500 gigalitres if we were elected. That was legislation we delivered a little more than 2 years ago, and confidence in these communities is now high. With good seasons and the hope of even more rainfall, small businesses there continue to hire more Australians, especially at harvest time, and they are and continue to be big contributors to Australia's tremendous growth in export. That's a story about my values as a parliamentarian, my values as a person, and these are now the values I bring to being your Minister for Small Business. I'm the first small business minister to call rural and regional Australia home. I'm the first from the National Party, and that's why I do spend as much time as I can listening. I mentioned it a bit before, for me, I knew the best ideas weren't in the bureaucracy or the bubble, or indeed the boarding school that some people call Parliament House. They're in barbershops, in bakeries, in family-owned bus lines, in the bush and in the burbs, in equal measure, and so I wanted to get out there and listen. I've been to a few capital cities too, just quietly. In fact, each and every one of them. I've travelled to every state and every territory since I became the Small Business Minister to date. I've held more than 60 forums in cities and towns and villages across this great nation. Because I remember what it's like to run your own small business. The hours, the hard work and the paperwork. And I also know that any bit of extra relief, whether that's through taxes or red tape cuts, helps you pursue that goal. And that's why I take your feedback seriously. Thanks to the feedback I received from small businesses around Australia, the popular, but it is very popular, instant asset write-off, up to $20,000, was made available to thousands more small businesses and for another 12 months. Because to back small business with tangible help is how we can help our economy grow. Because to back small business helps Australia's wages and jobs grow. And to back small business is to back a brighter future for our country. The feedback I hear means something to me, means a lot to me. To spend time with a local small business owner in their operation, over the farm gate or around the kitchen table or shop counter is a real joy. It truly is. And I have met some incredible, remarkable Australians. And let me share a couple. The first is Alana and Peter Laliotitis. They own Casino Greco, a bustling Greek cafe and family restaurant in the heart of Parramatta. And if you haven't been there, do yourself a favour and go there. Alana and Peter have been serving their signature lamb dish for about 16 years. Theirs is a cafe whose busiest day of the year, Mother's Day, is a must-do, a must-eat, on many families' plans. But in order to make the days of mums from across Western Sydney, they needed new equipment to increase productivity and to make meal production more efficient. So they decided to use their instant asset write-off to purchase a new oven and grill to upgrade their kitchen. Alana told me it helped immensely. It was necessary for us to produce good food for staff morale, and actually it had a chain reaction. And those words, a chain reaction, struck a chord with me. It's a terrific story of a small business supporting other local small businesses. It's a fantastic story, just like those I'm sure you all know, we all know, and which keeps Australians, many Australians, in a job doing what they do best. Alana purchased equipment for her kitchen upgrade from local suppliers and had a local tradie to do the installation. That multiplier effect is what I relied upon when I ran my own small business. It's local people, knowing local people, and recommending them to other locals to get a job done locally. It keeps money flowing around those communities and is a much-needed injection of confidence in many places which need it. Another story is that of Kate Marland from Bundaberg. A few weeks before I went to Bundy, she had taken over the family jewellery store from her parents and sought to expand it to into some new and changing markets. They make a lot of the stock themselves and use the instant asset write-off to purchase new printers and computers to make Kate's dream a reality. Kate also wanted to use the $20,000 instant write-off to purchase a new drill so her dad could more efficiently make the product she sells. Now, Dad was probably looking forward to retirement, but Dad, because she bought the new drill, now is making handmade jewellery, and it's a boon for her business, and it's great. And he's delighted. And so Dad continues, Kate's excited, and the whole thing is going gangbusters. It's just like the many stories of so many family enterprises which have served this nation over generations, and exactly what inspires me to keep working on their behalf. But I know there's a lot more work to do. I remember another thing that adds up, that takes far too much of small businesses' time, is red tape. I see the nods, red tape. And that's why the government has already slashed $5.8 billion in red tape, with incentives for further cuts on the table. One small business owner I had the pleasure of meeting was Andrew Cage. Now, he owns the Nomadic Cafe in Berwick, Victoria. Andrew understands the big picture. He gets it. He pointed to the stresses faced by many small business owners, particularly those in the hospitality game. There are fridges to regas, electricity bills to pay, and hidden costs in the form of red tape. That's what he told me. Andrew is a genuine contributor to his community, in particular the local country fire authority. And he said the cost of running a small business would be easier with a tax cut and simpler paperwork. That's something I hear echoed around the country. But so often the bugbears I hear is not paperwork that I can control, and that's why the Liberal and Nationals in this budget provided up to $300 million to states and territories to remove unnecessary regulatory barriers. So to give you a practical example, this might mean we reward a state government for reducing land use planning restrictions, making it easier for businesses to fit out their shops. This initiative, of course, dovetails nicely in with other previously announced measures to cut red tape, to reduce the bureaucracy, including the Simpler Business Activity Statement, which started on 1 July. It will also complement the rolling out of the single-touch payroll to make it simpler for small business. In tackling red tape, we plan to take the pressure off small businesses, the local job creators, so they can get on with running and growing their businesses. Each of these are runs on the board for small business. Each of these are practical measures of support from a government which gets small business, which cares about small business, which understands small business. And each of these is the result of the values we have, and I have, as the Minister. Small business is Australia's economic success story. Our jobs are growing. There are more small businesses, and the future of the sector is bright in this country. And although there are challenges which others would have beset small businesses, you are the people for whom this government and I will fight for every single day. You are the ones who create the jobs. You are the ones who give people a start, hope, reward. You are the ones who keep our economy strong. So my message and the dividend of our delivery in the past year is particular. It's very simple for small business. If you're thinking about it, go for it. If you want to hire someone, go for it. If you want to diversify or expand, do it. Go for it. We are the government for small business, made up of people who get small business, and we want to back you every step of the way and each and every day. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Warder. So many thanks to the Minister. So before we get to questions to Michael McCormick, I should say Anne's got a microphone and you should hold it quite close to your mouth so I don't have to repeat the question, so we pick it up in the microphones here. And so we've got to the top of the hour or a bit short of that. So we got plenty of time. So, Minister, thanks for an important talk tonight, given with a lot of energy and enthusiasm. As you know, your party, the National Party, did very well in the last election and probably is responsible for the coalition being returned. You held all your seats against Labor and you gained a seat from the Liberals. Now, I saw your leader, Barnaby Joyce, the Deputy Prime Minister, today talking down in Canberra, and he was mentioning the fact, he was talking about certain portfolios that are in the traditionally in the National Party domain. I note that since the last election, the small business portfolios moved from the Liberals to the Nationals. Is this something that the Nationals think is sort of theirs, or is this just something that happened and might change in the future?
Well, it's ours at the moment, Jared. and look, and I'm the 17th federal small business minister and the first from the Nationals, the first to actually call the regions home. There's been a peri-urban, I suppose you'd call them, ministers for small business previously, but I'm the first Nat, and I'm the first from the regions, and I'm proud of that. We coveted that role because we feel that each and every National Party member had been a small business advocate, and many of us, almost all of us, have been a small business owner or operator at some period in time. And so it was one of those roles when, as you say, we did so well at the last election that we earmarked for something that we wanted. And when you look at some of the other roles that we hold, Assistant Minister for Health, we've got the Aboriginal Affairs portfolio, Regional Development and Telecommunications, Agriculture, we've got Trade and Investment, or Assistant Minister in Trade and Investment and Tourism. They're really key National Party roles, and so we hold some important roles, and the Nationals are, you know, punching well above our weight in Canberra. We've always done that, but we're doing it even more at the moment in this government.
Right, so question here. There's a microphone coming. Just hold it up to you.
I should have mentioned infrastructure and transport too. I can't forget my mate Darren Chester. Yes, sir.
Minister, it's great to hear your feisty defence of regional Australia.
Blind. Yes, you're right. They are very resilient people. And look, as a National Party member, I always talk them up each and every day. And I think it's about positivity. I think it's about having. I mean, we can all be glass half full some days when we want to be, and some people can't even find their glass. But I think it's really important to make sure that each and every day we talk up what we're good at. And we are very good at agriculture. And the Ag White Paper that Barnaby Joyce produced a couple of years ago has had some really good wins in it for our farmers, our cotton farmers and beef producers. There's never been a better time to get into farming. And I mentioned Craig Shapiro, an investment banker, former Macquarie Bank, high flyer, who is, probably really didn't think probably 5 years ago that he was going to be investing in a Wagga Wagga dairy company, but he's doing it because he can see the future. So I think he's one of the shining lights of what we want to talk about more, and as long as the National Party is in Parliament, they've been writing us off for nearly 100 years. As long as we've been there, they've been writing us off, but we keep coming there and we keep fighting for and on behalf of our communities, and people keep voting for us because we deliver.
I should say before I go to the next question that your favourite Sydney most valued treasure, so there we go. There's a question here. Yep.
Yes. Michael, thank you for your passion and your commitment.
Sydney most valued treasure, so there we go. There's a question here. Yep.
Yes. Michael, thank you for your passion and your commitment. That having worn this hat as a small business person, and exports. Exports are so important, and I'm wondering what your portfolio is doing to promote export activity within that small business responsibility.
Thank you. Before you tackle that, Black.
Anything that happened in Canberra. And certainly, you know, he didn't mind rattling a few cages. Now, I think Blackjack, if he were here today and was still alive, would probably look at the National Party and be pretty proud of the legacy he left, but the people who followed on since him. Now, sure, we don't hold the trade portfolio anymore, but Andrew Robb certainly signed those trade agreements with South Korea, Japan and China. I know Steve Chauvet is doing a fantastic job with his Assistant Minister Keith Pitt, who is a Nationals member, and so the member for Hinkler from Queensland. They're doing a fine job. And certainly in the small business space, I know there's a big push to make sure that small business is included in any of the trade and marketing opportunities that are available. And I know Keith's going around the countryside and talking to as many rural communities as possible, with Austrade officials and EFIC, the export financing arm of government, if you like, to make sure that people are well aware of the opportunities that are available. And as I go around and talk to regional small business owners, so many of them come up and share their stories of success. And I know even the Yellowtail label, the wine from Griffith, from Yenda, has expanded even since those trade arrangements have been put into place and others are being looked at. It's a huge success in America and it's going elsewhere as well. So there's some fabulous opportunities at the moment for trade by small business.
Good question here.
Oh, hi. It's only a small downturn, but small business numbers have been dropping slightly over the last decade. I wonder if you could give us an explanation of why you think that's happening, although they are still a huge part of our economy, but they've leveled off and if anything, slipped back a bit. Is this due to economic forces or something here?
Well, a lot of small businesses, a lot of people have to, you know, when they start up a small business, they at first don't succeed. And a lot of people start a small business, they fail the first time and they come back bigger and better than ever. And sometimes they actually take on board others who have also failed. And so what used to be two small businesses then that have failed then becomes one which succeeds. And I've heard stories about that very situation wherever I've gone, particularly with my small business roadshows where I've taken along the ACCC and the ATO and the Australian Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman. And the success, the pathways to success have never been easier for small business. I appreciate it's hard. You've got to do a lot of hard work. You've got to get up early in the morning. You close off your shop late at night or your business and you go home, spend some time with family and then get back into the paperwork. It's a tough gig. But there's never been a more small business friend and family enterprise friend, let me tell you, than the one in Canberra at the moment. That's called the government. And with the lowering of the corporate tax rate to 27.5%, the lowest it's been for 77 years, the instant asset write-off, there's every pathway to success. And the fact is, if you actually Google small business at the moment, you'll go straight to the business.gov.au website portal where there's so much information about startups and mentoring and all those sorts of things. And the state government too, certainly New South Wales has got some really good things to help small business. The ATO, they've got a great portal. They want small business to succeed. They've got a callback option where people can talk to a tax office person in their own time. Like I say, there's never been a better time to be in small business. It's right now.
Question over there.
Yeah. Minister, I recently bought a laptop over the internet innocently without paying GST. When is the government going to stop this?
Waking moment of this winter recess, coming up with not just long-term but also short-term solutions as to what we can do. But what we won't be doing is putting a carbon tax back in, which is going to put pressure on every small business to pay power bills. What we will do is practical. What we will do is have a good energy mix so that renewables are considered. But at the same time, we need to also remember that that coal has to be part, coal-fired power stations have to be part of the mix. It's what keeps Sydney's lights on. It's what keeps, you know, lights on in every capital city and country town in this nation.
Question up there.
Yeah. Thanks, Minister. Thanks. You mentioned decentralisation and the success of ATO in Albury, and I know it's a work in progress, but do you have any views yourself in terms of where it has been, aside from the ATO success, and if there are any departments or functions in Canberra that you think are ripe to be transferred into to some of the more successful regional areas?
Thanks, Angus. And I know that RIDIC, the Rural Industries Research Development Corporation, has come to Wagga Wagga. It's brought a dozen or so high-paying jobs to the town, and it is in collaboration with Charles Sturt University, it is a very good success. But Senator Fiona Nash, the Minister for Regional Development and Telecommunications, has written to each and every minister asking them to look at their departments to see if agencies, indeed with even individuals within agencies, can be moved into regional areas. And if not, why not? I look forward to the results of that those inquiries that she's made. And look, Canberra is in fact one of those great decentralisation success stories. I mean, we all know that Federal Parliament originally sat in Melbourne. Canberra was nothing more than a sheep station, and look at it today. And you know, we've seen far too many government agencies stripped out of the bush. We want to make sure that not only government agencies, but also business has the incentive to move to regional areas. And the fact is, you know, you don't have to spend hours in the car getting to and from work, hours in congestion, hours in traffic. You can get anywhere in a regional capital like Wagga Wagga anywhere in 10 minutes, and that's stopping for three red lights. You know, and you can have a quality of life. The housing affordability crisis that so many are championing these days, or bemoaning, I should say, is only in Sydney and Melbourne. You know, you can buy a very decent home, average price $250,000, and live like a king in regional centres. And there are jobs there. There are jobs in regional centres. We want to grow those regional centres. We want to do it sensibly. We want to do it practically. And I look forward to Senator Nash's inquiries and see how they go as to what other government jobs could possibly be moved into country areas.
Question up the back.
Minister, thanks for that. It's good to hear the enthusiasm for the small business sector. I wonder what a lot of small business people would think about one level of bureaucracy paying another level of bureaucracy to remove red tape, but that's another issue. I do know that a lot of small businesses are quite concerned, and the Trade Union Royal Commission brought a lot of this up as well, about the ability of big companies to do special deals that give them a special advantage that small businesses are unable to get and unable to leverage under the current legislation. And I just wonder what you're doing to address that imbalance.
I'm assuming you're talking about enterprise bargaining agreements that that enable some of the corporate giants to pay staff when at a certain rate, when just down the road little cafes and little corner stores are paying people at far higher premium and cannot open on a Sunday. Look, the Fair Work Commission operates at arm's length of government. They made a recent determination on 5 of 122 awards. They don't cover some of the awards that we're hearing about so much now in nurses and other emergency services. They do not. They cover retailers and hospitality sector and the like. And the fact is, in little town in my electorate where I know there is a main street there where there's a little knick-knack store and an antique store and et cetera, et cetera. The town's only got about 800 people in it, but it's got two cafes. Neither of those cafes open on a Sunday because they, quite frankly, can't afford to pay people $40 and upwards to pull coffee. And yet, it's a real touristy town. Now, if and when this happens, if and when this goes through, and if and when they don't have to pay those penalty rates, which quite frankly they'll still be commensurate with Saturday rates, and it's the Fair Work Commission put in place by the previous government, commissioners appointed by the previous government, and let me tell you, a review initiated by the previous government, the previous Labor government, So when they don't have to pay those penalty rates, but they're paying them on a more commensurate with a Saturday rate, they will be able to open their stores, and they've told me that. And they will open, and people, it'll give an excuse for people in the major town, which is just 50, 60 kilometres down the road, to visit that town, and that town will have a re-energisation. Now, that's just one story in what is a myriad of stories right across the nation. And so, that'll be interesting. Well, Peter Strong, the CEO of the Council of Small Business of Australia, estimates that 10,000 jobs will be created by the Fair Work Commission's decision. So I look forward to seeing whether that's true. It'll be a work in progress. We'll watch with interest as the government. But at the same time, I do want to point out that it was a decision made at arm's length of government.
Just to clarify, the coffee in the Sunday rate is $40 an hour, right?
Yeah. For the full-time worker, the hourly rate.
How it all fits, just tell us how it fits out. I mean, you're a National Party minister, but of the Liberals, then you meet together. I mean, to what extent? I mean, when you come together, do you come together as one, or do you come together as two? When you go to the joint party?
Well, not that I'm going to tell tales out of the National Party, but let me tell you, when the National Party have our meetings on a Monday, it gets a bit feisty in there. We don't always necessarily agree. We are a very tight unit. It's almost like a family. You have your squabbles with your brothers and sisters, but when we leave that room, we've reached a point, and we go into the joint party room as one. And I have to say, Malcolm and Barnaby work very well together. It's they work very well together. The Liberal and the Nationals work very well together, and we've got a common goal, and that's to make this a better nation. And I think it's working very, very well at the moment. The Liberals know that we're serious when we decide that it's a die in the ditch issue, and there's been some die in the ditch issues, since I've been in Parliament. The potential sale of GrainCorp to Archer Daniels Midland, the American company, was one. We did not want to see our grain prices determined by a boardroom in Illinois. There's been a few other of those sorts of issues, and I think the foreign investment rules that were changed were brought about by strong National Party representation. We've always been well led. Barnaby, Warren Truss, and before him Tim Fisher and the like, John Anderson, Mark Vale, and the Liberals always know when we're serious, we're deadly serious. But we are. We have our squabbles in the National Party room, but let me tell you, you don't hear about them. You don't read about them. We don't leak. That's a good thing.
And do you have your squabbles in the joint party room?
From time to time. And you only have to watch Sky News to know that.
We all watch Sky News.
Yeah.
We all do.
As we should.
Now, we're getting very close to you, and there's a quick question here, and we've got to finish. Have I missed anyone?
This lady, yep.
Minister, out of your portfolio, since we've moved beyond that, many country Australians are conservative.
About education, about health, about infrastructure. They're delighted that we're doing the Inland Rail $8.4 billion investment. They're not talking about those sorts of other peripheral issues. And whilst they're important for some Australians, I acknowledge that. It's also important that governments stick to what they said they were going to do prior to an election. And we said prior to the election that we would have a plebiscite. And as far as I'm concerned, that's what we should do. And I know I speak on behalf of other National Party members are thinking about that issue too. We want to stick true with what we said. We won the election, and the only people standing in the way of of same-sex marriage, if that is what indeed the nation wants. Labor and the Greens, who voted against having a plebiscite in the Senate.
There's a question here. We're getting very close to the end. Yes.
I just wondered, with the penalty rates, why you don't promote the fact that people who work on Saturday and Sunday are luckier than the people who work during the week, and that loads of people would love to work on Sunday with penalty rates. I mean, there are loads of people who work 5 days a week and don't get the higher prices, and parents and that can't work at weekends. Mm. So I think you should promote the fact that anyone getting penalty rates is luckier than those who work during the week.
Sure, and look, that's good feedback, and it's all interesting to hear. And at the end of the day, we want people to be paid a good wage for the job that they do. And I acknowledge too that Saturday and Sunday are special days of the week. That a lot of people also have those days off. I understand that. I do. But at the same time, we also want to make sure that our businesses succeed, particularly small businesses. And small businesses can't be bogged down with paying too high wages, too high penalty rates, and I'm hoping that Peter Strong is right when he says that 10,000 extra jobs will be created by this decision, made at arm's length of by the Fair Work Commission, made at arm's length by the from the government. I'm hoping that he's right. I look forward to that, and look forward to a lot more places getting open on a Sunday and creating even more jobs for the economy.
Final brief question.
Yes, Michael, having been heavily involved professionally in the progressing on that?
Well, look, certainly we provide just to look at the personalised, individualised section on the not just the business.gov.au, but also on the Australian Taxation Office website, to see how small business can be helped, how it can be helped in taxation, how it can be helped in startups, how it can be helped with mentoring. There are programs, there are grants available, particularly for women, for Indigenous startups, but also for all small businesses. There are pathways to success that are being promoted by this government, because we want small business to continue to be the engine room of the economy. We want to grow the 5.6 million people who are employed by the 3.2 million small businesses out there, and we want to make sure that they're paying the lowest tax rate possible. Bill Shorten wants to increase those tax rates, so we're doing everything we can to make sure that small business has every pathway to success, and we'll continue to do that as long as we're in government.
We've got one final, very brief question.
Thank you, Minister, for your encouraging comments. Would you like to comment on what you're doing to help deal with skills shortages in some country areas? For example, I understand a country abattoir had to shut down because the Afghan workers weren't allowed to remain, and as a result, that town no longer had an abattoir and the farmers no longer had a local place to send their stock to.
Well, we're going to be spending hundreds of millions of dollars in upskilling Australians. Now, I appreciate that the 457 visa working arrangement has been changed, and we have to make sure that there are jobs there for Australians first, and that's, you know, one of the first orders of government is to make sure that there are the jobs that are available, particularly in regional areas, will be possibly filled by, you know, Australians first. That's first order of business. I mean, we're not a government which wants to enable an easy pathway for foreign workers to be taking jobs which should be filled and can be filled and will be filled by Australians. And I appreciate the meat processing industry is always very volatile. The high prices of stock at the moment are not helping. I know I've had Cootamundra abattoirs in my own electorate close and 225 people out of work. If that were the equivalent in Sydney, it would be 173,000 people, and you can imagine the outcry. It's a very volatile industry, but at the same time, We need to make sure that those jobs are being filled by Australians. That's why Karen Andrews and Michaela Cash, the two ministers in that portfolio, are working very hard at making sure that there is a skilling, upskilling process for Australians to make sure that those, and I will say young people, because a lot of them are young people who will take the opportunity for that program, are skilled in such a way that they can fill those jobs for the future. Thank you.
Many thanks.
Thanks, Gerard.
Many thanks, Minister. Well, I'll be very brief, but I want to finish right on time. Many thanks to Michael McCormick for coming here tonight and speaking across a wide range of issues with a great deal of detail and a great deal of enthusiasm. I've learned a lot tonight about small business. I've learned a lot tonight about the Nationals and the relationship with the Liberals and the Coalition. And I've learned heaps about the Royal Hotel at Grong Grong, which I understand serves a good gin and tonic, so I'll be down there soon. But for tonight, Minister, many thanks, and you've had a successful career so far, and thanks for tonight, and best wishes for the future. Well done.
You have been listening to the Sydney Institute podcast. This podcast is proudly brought to you through the support of Microsoft Australia. We hope you enjoyed listening and can join us again soon.